Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Disclosure of pecuniary interest and general nature thereof. You can speak now or before the item. And mover and seconder to approve the agenda, please. Mayor Lowry, Councilor Ferguson, questions or comments on the agenda? All in favor? Carried. Approval of the minutes. Mover and seconder, Councilor Ferguson, Mayor Lowry. Questions, comments on the minutes? All in favor? Carried. We got a couple of consent reports. Actually, I'll jump right ahead to you, Rhonda. We're just going to change the order a little bit. We'll move up to F5, 2020 amendment to development charges, background study, and bylaw. With a recommended motion. I'll get a mover and seconder for the recommended motion first. Councillor Holmes, Councillor Ferguson, and go ahead, please.
Thank you. So what I'm asking for is an amendment to the development charges background study and bylaw to accommodate a change in legislation through the Development Charges Act, which eliminates the 10% statutory deduction for services like recreation, library, administration, I missed one, daycare. So instead of us having to come up with that 10% on our own, when we go to do those growth-related projects, we would be able to recover more from development charges and then therefore less from the tax base or some other source. So the total cost of doing that work is $8,650. The work is also included in development charges, so you can apply it to this project. So that's $7,785, leaving a balance of $865 to come from the 2020 budget. So I'm asking for approval to move forward with the amendment.
Questions or comments? Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you, Rhonda, for I think that DC charges should be updated yearly. I don't know how often do we do them, every 3 years or something?
Yeah, the legislation is every 5 years, so we do it every five years.
It's a very important part of our financing and stuff, so good stuff. And if anybody, if there's no more comments, I'll move it.
It's already been moved. Yeah. Any more questions or comments? So the recommended motion, the Committee of the Whole recommends that Council approve an amended amendment to the development charges background study and bylaw to address changes made by the Province of Ontario to Development Charges Act by Bill 108, and furthermore that the amendment be completed by Watson Associate Economists Limited at a cost of $8,650, including non-recoverable HST, to be funded first from development charges in the amount of $7,785 and the balance of $865 from other professional fees in the 2020 administration budget. All in favor for that recommended motion? That's carried. Thank you. So I'm back on the first page, consent reports, mover and seconder. For the consent reports and minutes to be received. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Maiden, MRPC, Councillor Holmes, or Mayor Lowry, are you speaking to those?
I wasn't going to. It's just the minutes and the operations report that we get. We're to get monthly. If there's any questions, I could certainly take them.
Any questions on the first one? Second one, building permit activity report. Councillor Maiden.
Just a comment that notice we're kind of moving towards like a 90-10 housing strategy, according to the building reports anyway, as far as like rural and Elmont. Like I think last year was 88% building in Elmont and the 12% in rural areas. It kind of goes up and down, but over the past 3 years, it's all been over 80.
Any further comments or questions on these two reports? Councilor Ferguson?
Yes, thank you. On page 19, open building activity report. Again, we're still at 1,409 outstanding, if I read it correctly. 3 years ago, we started off at 1,550, so we haven't put much of a hole in it, I guess. And my concern of the outstanding ones, do we foresee any liability specifically to any of those? Or are they the low-hanging fruit that's just kind of sitting there that there isn't the liability issues?
That's a good question, Councillor. With regards to liability, yes, some of the open building permits actually have, in some cases, people in buildings that do not have occupancy permits. We also have several hundred properties that have occupancy permits but have not had final inspections. And to give you one stat that I looked at most recently, we had 36 final building inspections with three passes. That's at 8%. We have another stat, 73 properties that we've completed a final inspection on. In some cases, we've completed two. Of those 73 properties, there were 124 inspections completed. Some properties were done twice. 10 properties were done three times. One property was done four times. One property was done five times. That means that when an inspector showed up to assess the property that has an occupancy permit, that more than likely has somebody living in it, that property then failed five times. Are we liable? It's a good question. We are notifying the holder of the building permit. They do get a report that identifies those deficiencies. However, I will say that the holder of the building permit is not always the occupier of the property. And we are taking some actions to further that connection and to bring the closure of final building permit inspections to a more successful closing rate and to reduce these numbers. But we do have, we are getting better in the more current building permits, but we do have some that have been open for a couple of years, and we've instituted things such as renewal permit or charges. So basically, and additional inspection charges. So as we return, you do get inspected more times. But we do find that we are showing up to complete inspections. So these will be the final inspections, and the properties are not ready. We should never have been called for those final inspections because the constructor of the property was not ready for that inspection. So that's why we've instituted extra charges. So I'm not sure that answers your original question, Counselor, but we do have things that are life safety issues at some properties. And when we return to inspect them, they're not corrected.
Yes, thank you for the explanation. And yes, it does address it. But I wonder, in those situations that you've explained where we've been back multiple times, does our fee go up accordingly? Does in fact be somewhat self-funding as we're moving forward with these? Because I can see where there could conceivably be issues as we get into it more and not putting much of a dent in them.
Well, the fee for a recurring inspection is $125. So if you do get your first final inspection as part of your building permit fees, so if you pass, everything's good, it's covered off in the first building permit fee. If we return the second time, we would do that inspection. If you failed, we would charge you another fee to come back for the third time. If you passed, we would pass you without charging extra. to put it in perspective, when I said the pass rate of 8% or 3 out of 36, that was about 2 days worth of effort to conduct those 36 inspections, roughly. And I believe that involved two of our inspectors kind of sharing. So between doing the inspection, writing the reports, providing the information and the direction back to the building permit holder, that was about two plus days of effort.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Councillor.
Any Deputy Mayor Minnelli?
Yeah,
you turn your microphone on, please.
I was just looking at part of this report, and you think it's a pipe dream that we're going to get back to 1998 to do inspections on houses that have changed hands five or six times and since then, and maybe the work wasn't even done when the house was built. Do you think that's a bit of a pipe dream?
I do appreciate where the councillor is coming from. Some of these are a little bit of an issue with regards to the staffing as well. The demands on our building inspectors right now are really attending to the scheduled permits. So as the calls come in for new existing builds and things like that that are going on, staff are spending the majority of their time on those. The ability to get out into the field and to do inspections on the 1999 home is limited. And oftentimes, as you know, the easier ones are already out of this mix. These are the more complex ones. So we do have a challenge, yes. I'm not familiar with the outstanding building permits in 1999 to be able to tell you what the exact circumstances are, but we are getting better at the more current ones, and we are proactively putting in processes to try and to close out those building permits as best we can and get them off the books.
But I hope that on this chart, what page is it? It's page 3 of 3 of the building permit. The numbers are, if we keep the numbers down at the bottom of the chart, right? They seem to be going up at the bottom of the chart from 2016 on. The numbers seem to be going up. So if we concentrate on that part of it, it's really going to help, right? I hope. Because I don't see a problem going back 4 or 5 or 6 years and something that's half open or has been. But when you start going back 20 years, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? All in favor to receive these motion or these report 10 minutes? It's carried. So we're over on F1, building and planning. Zoning bylaw amendment Z1220, concession 10, lot 16, being part of RP27R8990, parts 1-4, 9-12, on RP27R8445, 430 Ottawa Street. 2241497 Ontario Limited. So I'll start with the mover and seconder of the recommended motion. Deputy Mayor Minnelli moves it. Councillor Ferguson. So comments and questions on this recommended motion. Councillor Maiden.
I think I was one who deferred this. I wanted to take a look, too, at the official plan, the zoning bylaw, and so forth. I don't really see how this really meets the official plan. The official plan is really quite specific on densities. This is sort of anticipates kind of a new type of mixed use. The official plan mentions low-rise apartment buildings of like 3 stories, and I think that's as far as it goes. This is very, very high density, and I think if we're going to anticipate anything like this that's going to affect traffic, the official plan mentions that it can't be out of character in the neighborhood, and this is really quite an abrupt change from the residential neighborhood behind it. There's all kinds of, like, through the whole comprehensive zoning bylaw, through the official plan, it seems completely out of character with something like this. And this would be a very, very big change for Elmont. And I really can't, I think it needs a lot of changes. It would need a very, very strict site plan. In one part of the proposal, it talks about a four-story apartment building, and the other part talks about five stories. I can't really support it.
Other questions or comments? Deputy Mayor Minnelli?
Yes, I'm in favor of the plan. I think it kind of suits the OP with a different range of use of properties in Elmont. I don't think anywhere in town Elmont could you build a facility like that would be as easy on traffic because it's on Ottawa Street. No snow plowing, no road system for 125 people. That's a big chunk of a subdivision. So I am in favor of the project. I know there's lots of things to be tweaked when it comes down to the site plan control. And I'm willing to, I've moved the motion, but I'm willing to wait till the site plan comes in before we start picking the project apart. Thank you.
Councillor Holmes.
I guess one of the things that really surprised me was that the marking study presented to support this project, this was the first time that I was aware that we have extra commercial space. So my question to the planner through the chair was, have you reviewed this market study with externally with anyone? Have you spoken to Tiffany McLaren in regard to long-term needs for commercial space? So how have we validated this study?
So with the review of the market study, I reviewed it. I looked at primarily the population projections because the market study is in part based on what is projected for the future growth of Elmont. I don't believe Tiffany has seen this study. It didn't occur to me to circulate Tiffany the application for review, as I don't believe our internal circulation normally extends to Tiffany. So Tiffany would have been missed in the circulation of the application.
So I would suggest that since this is quite a change in our plan, taking it from commercial to residential, and I'm quite aware that the current building that's on there could be torn down and another industrial building put up that would have trucks going and back and forth all the time. So it's not that, and I'm not really opposed to the residential use, but I am concerned about our commercial property and whether or not we should be making these changes without having some good discussion with and maybe this market study validated that indeed we do have extra commercial property in the area right now.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. To the planner, could you clarify again that this meets all the requirements that you have reviewed in reference to the OP? That's my first question. And the second question would be, what could be built there right now? And what type of setbacks are required? If it was chosen to develop anything more than as proposed.
Thank you, Councillor Ferguson. So in terms of the review of the application, we looked at our growth and settlement policies, our residential policies, and smart growth policies in the OP. And it is in my opinion that it does meet those policy sections, particularly for intensification and mix of densities, as well as increasing the number of rental units as per our residential policies. It is also considered smart growth as it does utilize available infrastructure, and it has been confirmed through Public Works and through the servicing brief that the applicant provided that there is sufficient wastewater and water servicing available for the site. So it does utilize an existing parcel of land that is presently underutilized and is fairly large for an appropriate mix of commercial and residential uses. In terms of your second question, what can be built there on the site right now? So the site is zoned for a shopping center, which is presently there, and is designated for highway commercial. Our present zoning would permit a 14-meter commercial building, and it could be as far back as 6 meters from the rear yard. So the concept plan provided by the applicant does provide a 15-meter building with a 26-meter setback in order to provide sufficient buffer space for against the existing residential uses. I'll also note that Steve Pence with Novatec, the agent for the owner, is here, so he may also have additional insights to provide with regards to the concept plan that is being proposed. But as of right now, based on the existing zoning, a commercial building of 14 meters can be built up to 6 meters from the rear yard.
Thank you. Any questions? Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I realize we have Mr. Pence here from Novatec, and it was difficult to hear at the last meeting. And I wondered, Mr. Chair, if there was anything that, you know, as representing the applicant, if he'd like to share with us or speak to from the last meeting that maybe wasn't easily understood just because of the technology.
Can I get you to state your name and the microphone on, please?
Good evening. My name is Steve Pence. I'm a planning consultant with Novatec. And we filed the planning applications on behalf of the property, or the developer rather, Elm Developments. And so first off, I'm very happy to be here tonight. So thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate we had some difficulty communicating a couple weeks ago. And so this opportunity I felt was very important for me to be able to answer any questions that you might still have, but also to make a couple of very important points about our applications that I felt didn't come through maybe as clearly as we had hoped during the last session. My intention isn't to describe all the application details tonight. I can answer any questions because I feel that our application was well represented in our planning rationale. That's the justification that we provided with the application. And we also feel that the planner's report did a really good job of summarizing the application and sort of highlighting the important aspects that you need to be aware of. But what I would say, though, the most important point that I would like to stress tonight is we've advanced the official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment applications on the strength of a concept plan. And that concept plan was very carefully designed in coordination with an architect to come up with a design that we felt would fit the site in terms of its local context, in terms of the site constraints, and using principles of urban design. Recognizing that it's an underdeveloped or underutilized site, we felt that it was important to introduce a mixed-use type of zone to the property that would allow us to establish the principle of development that would allow for both residential and commercial uses to kind of coexist on the site. To do that, we're proposing to bring the commercial uses closer to the street to try and provide more of a sort of an urban streetscape along Ottawa Street, and that would allow for the rear of the property to be developed for residential uses. If you consider that the market study that was submitted recommended that we could implement quite a number of units, residential units, to the supply for the town of Elmont, we pared that back considerably. And we came up with a design that we felt was the correct balance for the town. We didn't want to put a building on the concept plan that would be any greater than 4 meters, because that, in our opinion, would be too much for the site. But we felt that 4 meters would be, or 4 stories rather, would be a good balance that would allow for appropriate amount of intensification in terms of density, and still allow us to be able to accommodate both the commercial and residential on the site. We've placed a building on the concept plan with a 26-meter rear yard. That allows for a bit of a buffer between the rear of the building. So there's a buffer strip, and then there's a row of parking, and then there's a drive aisle, and then there's another row of parking, and then finally there's a landscape strip, and then the property line. So that's 26 meters. And with a four-story building, the sun shadow studies that were prepared clearly show that it's really a negligible impact on those homes. Certainly at certain times of the day, very early in the morning, at certain times of the year, that is, there might be a minor impact. But for the most part, I find that those sun shadow studies really clearly demonstrate that it's a negligible impact on the properties to the north. So I don't want to repeat myself, but I think it's important to recognize that we took a lot of time to develop a concept plan that we felt was illustrative of how this site could be intensified to bring a good thing to the town of Elmont. We tried to balance the correct density, the correct spacing of buildings, the uses on the property, with what we felt would work at this site. It's just a concept at this point, and we will be coming back to council at some point with a request for a site plan approval. And it's at that point that we can get into the details on things like parking and landscaping. But we feel confident with this concept, at least, we can move forward to get to that next stage. I just wanted to reiterate to the planner's comments before about what could be built there as of right. I don't like to put too much consideration to what you can build as of right. But like you said, currently you could build a 14-meter building as close as either 6 or 3 meters to the rear lot line. And that can be pretty scary. And if that kind of application came forward, you'd be wondering, well, geez, what can we do about that? Well, the answer is you have site plan approval to deal with those kinds of issues, to try and work with the developer to try and ameliorate some of those impacts through building placement and try to address those kinds of impacts. The reason I'm saying this is that's the exact same situation we'd be in with this concept. It's a concept to establish the principle of development, and we can move forward on that basis and then working with council to bring back a site plan that we think would work for the site. It could look very similar to what you see in front of you today, or it could be slightly different. I can't give you those guarantees, but what I can say is that what we have presented to you is something that's been carefully thought out, that as a professional planner I feel is a good balance for that site and will work well with the community. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have tonight, and I'll turn it back to you.
Any questions? Councillor Holmes.
Yes, and thank you for doing some explaining for us. My question is the commercial buildings at the front of the property, is there plans to put a residential apartments on top of them also?
So that's not necessarily in the plans, but when the way we structured our application was that if we're introducing residential uses to the site, it makes a lot of sense to have the ability to put some residential uses in the upper story of the commercial buildings. So again, it's about establishing the principle of development, and so we wanted to make sure that flexibility was in the official plan amendment and through the zoning to allow that for that kind of development to happen. It's not necessarily what that concept shows, but it's built into the structure of our application to allow for it.
Thank you. So just to add on to that question, I'm actually in favor of residential on top of commercial. I think it's a good use of land. My question would be, if that was a decision that you made, then you would be asking for additional apartments on that lot over and above the 156 or whatever it was that you were planning on building.
Well, I guess you're right. The concept and the parking spaces that we've shown on that concept do not account for residential uses above the commercial building. But if over time the plan evolved to the point where we were going to put some uses above the commercial, then we'd have to account for the parking, and that might mean some adjustments to the rear buildings or finding those spaces for parking somewhere on the site. That's the site planning exercise that we would be having to go through.
Councillor Maiden.
I'm wondering if, because our official plan is fairly straightforward, I think, about as far as, you know, fitting in with the surrounding neighborhood. And I'm wondering if two of those stories that are along the back could be moved over to the front. Like, I'm also in favor of kind of mixed-use residential, but this is almost like jumping into the deep end for us, because if we are a small town, we have to maintain a small town kind of character. You know, that's over and over in our official plan. And having a sort of a walkable space on that property with, you know, commercial and residential. But you've already said, I think, in your market study that there's too much commercial properties in El Monte. So what if those commercial properties don't get filled? Then what?
Well, the introduction of commercial closer to the street is sort of a redesign of the commercial space, with the intention that redesign would attract the tenants that the current building isn't attracting. So the idea would be that those commercial buildings would get filled, and it's desirable to have those at the right at the street or close to the street, rather than bringing residential that much forward. We want that Ottawa Street corridor to have a commercial feel. But the site, in our opinion, is large enough that it can accommodate the residential towards the rear. And that's why we've requested in our zoning application a setback requirement to ensure that residential is to the back of towards the back of the property. And by the way, I guess the other thing I didn't mention is that we distinctly tried to arrange the site to separate those two uses, the residential from the commercial, because they are two distinct uses. Doesn't mean they can't coexist in a functional site design. And so we've created some amenity space and some ability to integrate the two, but that's precisely why we've provided for the green space between the two buildings, or between the two uses rather, so that they can operate as two separate entities, but still have integration between the two.
Just a follow-up question. So the apartments, 124 units in the apartment blocks, that's basically, I think, 15, 16 units per floor.
Okay.
And are these like two bedrooms, one bedroom, or a mix? Do you know, or is that contemplated at all at this point?
Again, that level of detail hasn't been sorted out. It's conceptual, showing that it's very possible and very appropriate to accommodate that number of units on that property in that configuration. The unit sizes and that sort of thing, whether they're one bedroom and two bedroom, would be a combination, but that kind of detail would come later. When you have a site plan and building plans that are prepared.
Councillor Ferguson.
Can you flash up the back in the direction, much like you have that?
So that's a rendering to show what you'd be looking at from the rear. So two cars are parked on the parking spaces that are abutting a landscape strip. So in front of those cars, there's a landscape strip, and then you'd see the property line. And I know there's always some danger in using these kinds of renderings in presentations like this, because they could give a false sense of what it could look like. But it's meant to illustrate that the style of building and how, you know, with landscaping as it matures, things can look like. So I don't want you to walk away from thinking that this is going to look just like that, but it's meant to portray a certain image.
No, I appreciate that.
I was just trying to get a perspective on the distance.
Okay.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the comments I brought up in the previous meeting from residents, there was concern about the traffic study, the amount of congestion that could possibly be caused. If, can we go back to the slide that shows the, so your main entrance, the concern was it'd be a good percentage of the people living there would be turning left to head out to March Road. Can you comment on what your thoughts are of the congestion that would cause, or do you have another solution to get people on their way to Ottawa in the morning coming out of that parking lot?
The concept plan shows for a couple entrances onto Ottawa Street, and the traffic study that was prepared took that into account. And based on the traffic counts that we were able to confirm through the town and through reviewing of the Parsons study that was done, I think in 2019, we were able to demonstrate through that study that the traffic impacts generated by traffic flow would not impact the functioning of Ottawa Street. Entrances and traffic circulation through the site, those are details that we can also look at through site plan and making sure that that traffic queuing and that sort of thing that can work. I'm not a traffic engineer, but what I can say is that that report has been peer reviewed on behalf of the town by Parsons, who actually did your 2019 study, and they found that the study addressed their concerns from a peer review point of view, and so I have to, as a planner, rely on two professionals looking at the study and confirming that it does sufficient work to establish the principle of development on this property. And it's possible that further traffic work might be required at the site plan stage, but in order to get the project moving towards that, we've done sufficient work to get it there. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but
I guess basically, the congestion would be the people trying to get out of the parking lot, not so much the people on Ottawa Street. There's so much traffic there at peak times in the morning. It'd be difficult to turn left and cross over two lanes of traffic to get on your way out to March Road. So I guess my comment or my question would be the congestion getting out of the parking lot if you have numbers commuting to Ottawa.
Yeah. Well, again, I guess all I can say to that question, and maybe it's not as fulsome of an answer as you're hoping from me as a planner, but the traffic engineer report confirmed that the flow of traffic based on the numbers of units and known traffic counts for Ottawa Street as recent as 2019 wouldn't create an effect on the functioning of Ottawa Street. And that's been supported by the peer review. So to that extent, I have to rely on that being sufficient to support the applications.
Councillor Holmes.
The traffic study that's been that was done in 2019, was that the one that was done during construction in Elmont? That's a time when a lot of people were avoiding Ottawa Street. I know people who actually came home on number 7 and through Carlton Place instead of using Ottawa Street. So I'm just wondering about the validity of that study.
Councillor Girard.
Thank you. I actually, going along the same lines of thought, we've had since 2019, over 200 new houses built in split between Neilcore and Riverside, or the other side of town. This suggestion is for 124 units, and if I could ask the planner, at 124 units, based on one and a quarter spots per parking space. How many cars would be parked just for the apartments alone in this area?
I believe the number is 173 or 174. That would be taking into account the required visitor parking, so at a rate of 0.2 spaces per apartment unit, I believe.
Okay, so we're basically talking of just shy of 200 cars being parked in that area. What Councillor Dalgety is asking is exactly my thought, too. If we have 100 and let's cut it down. Let's say some people don't drive to the city. So let's say 150 cars that are leaving within a 2-hour window. That's going to create a lot of congestion. Possibly a question to the CAO. At what point would we then have to deal with creating more traffic? Be it signs or like it's going to be a very large expense. Like this is fantastic and definitely what the provincial policy statement wants is infill, but how is that going to create, or what is that going to create in the next 5 years with regards to people trying to exit out of Mississippi Mills?
We haven't actually done a traffic study that would include, or a traffic projection that would include, these numbers coming out of this development. However, the current use of this property is slated as commercial, and there is a mall there, which in and of itself should generate a similar level of traffic if the mall was being utilized and was not vacant to the point it is. I think what we have here is a situation where the current property is not being utilized. There's a lot of empty space in that parking spot on any given day. This, while it may generate, I guess, the level of traffic that we would have foreseen with the commercial space, it's probably more likely to happen with this development than it would with the current mall and current configuration and tenant mix that's there on the site right now. We haven't done any further study to determine if additional traffic lights are necessary. As Mr. Pence pointed out, it was peer-reviewed. They haven't, to my knowledge, anticipated any additional traffic lights or traffic components that were required in that study. Part of what was coming up, I don't think that was included in the study. If it's necessary, then we would be looking at the next stage of this project. I think it's relevant to keep in mind that what the concept that you're seeing here is just that it's a concept. But what you're being asked to agree to are the principles of development, which are to allow up to 50 units per hectare on this site for residential, the component of commercial space, and as well as the additional height that they're looking for. I know we talked about as-of-right development, but as-of-right development on this property with the current zoning, where council wouldn't be being asked to approve these components, would allow a building of 14 meters high. It would allow a building, as we've heard, between 3 to 6 meters to the rear, which could put a commercial property very close to the residential component in the rear of this property. You know, right now, this concept, and it is still a concept, but it's the proposal that they put before us, would have 26 meters versus the 6 meter allowable. So this is a substantial divergent in my mind from what they could potentially be putting on this property if they decided to stick with the current zoning and keep it a commercial property. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Councillor. I don't know if Mr. Pence has anything further he would like to add with regards to the traffic components, if there was anything that was required. But we haven't done traffic projections based on this project for future infrastructure or impacts, because it wasn't envisioned when we were doing our transportation master plan or any of those components.
I guess my question then would be, more to the fact that we have to assume that, that if this happens, I understand it's going to be beneficial to the developer, but how is it going to be cost effective to the residents who already live here? It's going to cost us a lot more money.
I wouldn't agree with that statement, Councillor. This is actually, as was alluded to, intensification of land. This would be considered a very efficient use of land. If we would consider the amount of land that this that 124 unit development would require in a subdivision, it would require a lot more servicing. I believe the Deputy Mayor did point out earlier that this would very much limit the amount of municipal services required for 124 units. As he is correct, we would not be going in on this site to perform even as much as snow clearing. There's a substantial amount of green space that's been included on this site. That would all be maintained by the developer as well. So this actually would be a fairly low cost impact on the municipality in terms of operational component. And with regards to industrial servicing, we've determined that there's no additional like water and sewer capacity that's going to be required for this development. So I would think that this would be a fairly low cost component into the municipality, given its intensification of land.
Mayor Lowry first.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think there is already a service in and a municipal to allow one commercial building already on the site, right? I know that it is, because we passed it for a restaurant. So there's a, if you're looking back, we've passed to have a commercial building out in front of the mall.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So it's not a concept that's new, that to bring more business to the mall. The mall's failing. 200 cars aren't going to go to Ottawa every day. 3/4 of the people that buy these apartment buildings are going to be retired. It's going to be a cash cow for the municipality. They don't have a problem turning out of the mall now. So I don't see it. It couldn't be in a better place for traffic. It's at the edge of town, and it's a confined area, and we're going to get 125 tax bills out times maybe 3,000. It's a lot of money for no services put in.
Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to speak in support of this application. I think it's a very desirable redevelopment for that property. I have to echo some of the comments of the Deputy Mayor. This is fully serviced. We're not putting in sidewalks. We're not clearing snow off those sidewalks or off those roads. And the one thing that hasn't been discussed here at all is the walkability of this, whether or not people will actually have cars they could live in this apartment complex and pretty much do all the things that they need to do, and they're in walkable distance of all those pieces. So, you know, I think this is highly desirable. When we look at the goals of the PPS about being a livable and safe community with mixed land use, like, absolutely that falls in line with it. In terms of smart growth, you know, building on already serviced land, there's a lot of very attractive components to this development, and I fully support it. One thing I think we need to consider as well is there's not a better place it could be situated. Eventually, everybody comes out on Ottawa Street if you're going towards Ottawa, so there's no better place for this to be in the town of Elmont than on the four-lane portion of Ottawa Street. So that whatever impacts may be occurring, they'll be minimalized. I fully support the application. The one thing I would say is I would encourage, and you know, this isn't yours to do, Mr. Pence, but I would encourage the developer to help help the community understand the project. I think that would go a long way for the neighbors and others to understand what this development is and what could be on that property. I don't know that people fully appreciate what could be there, but all to say, it's intensification. It is mixed use we don't have. We do not have that higher density availability. We have more apartments coming on, but we still don't have any surplus of them by any means. And I think this is an excellent development opportunity for the residents of Mississippi Mills. Whether or not they would take advantage of it, it's the kind of development that's not going to hit their pocketbook.
Councillor Maiden.
Just one last question. Is a proponent willing to make, say, 25% of this affordable housing?
At present, the thinking is that they would be rented at market rates, but again, that's the kind of level of discussion that we could get to. And I think that, you know, I'd have to speak to our client about that, of course, but I think there might be some opportunity to be able to come to an agreement to commit certain number of units being in that affordable range, whether they meet the definition of affordable or not, but at least in terms of, you know, closer to that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's one of our goals, is to have more affordable housing, and I think we're asked in our official plan to try and hit a target of 25%. I don't know whether you could do that on this particular thing, but maybe in the build the units, if you're going to move some units over to the top of the commercial ones, that would probably work better for you.
That might be a good way to try to accommodate some affordable housing, for sure.
Yeah. Well, if you could accommodate that, you could change my mind. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I can't make that kind of commitment. But again, that's exactly why I was saying earlier that we would like to be able to have the ability to put residential uses above the commercial, because it provides some flexibility for how the site develops. So we don't show that in the concept, but the structure of the official plan amendment and the zoning bylaw amendment that we've requested would account for that, and so it provides for that flexibility.
Just a follow-up question, and maybe this is to the planner. Was that affordable housing discussed in the consultation on this, Maggie?
Unfortunately, I can't recall. I believe I was at the pre-consultation meeting, but that would have been quite some time ago. Steve, you might have a better memory of that meeting.
Yeah, the pre-consultation meeting with staff was, I want to say it was in January 2019. And of course, things moved slowly since then, in part because of the COVID situation. But certainly, I think affordable housing did come up. There was never any commitment from anybody as to whether this development would include affordable housing, but it's certainly on everybody's radar screen, and I think there's opportunity for negotiation on that.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. I share with Mayor Lowry the thought about the need for education around, you know, some new development, because certainly what I've come to realize is the current shopping center as it is not viable, and it could be torn down and, you know, something that is much less attractive than an apartment building could go up there, you know, in terms of some kind of a commercial space, whether it be, you know, something with trucks going all day or night or not, you know, bringing in deliveries and things. So I think, I would support it, but I would also, say that Councillor Maiden's thought on some affordable housing is certainly very attractive, if that could be entered into discussion somewhere along the line.
Okay. Any more questions? I'll ask, I'll kind of put our CAO on the spot a little bit, but can you comment on, like, We kind of touched on site control plan, coming back to council with the site control plan. Can you comment on a little bit more details? We mentioned we're at the concept version of this now versus site control plan, what would council be discussing?
Well, I mean, predominantly, if we wanted to scroll up to the recommendation, I mean, that really provides your guidance on what you're approving right now. And this sets the principles and the parameters that are going to guide this going forward. So, I mean, what's being asked and what you would be approving in this recommendation are these components, and maybe just in summary, the net density of 50 units per hectare for medium to high density. In your official plan right now, your units per hectare is 22. Okay, so this would be, in terms of you, at the site plan control, you're going to have this 50 units per hectare. That's what you're going to be working towards. Okay, so whether it's in four stories, it's in units on top of the commercial, what have you, 50 units per hectare is what you will be allowing the developer to build towards. If the developer decided to come in with something less than that, that would be up to their choice, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to force them to come with something less. Maximum height of 15 meters, maximum density of 50 units per net hectare. So 15 meters. This is 1 meter in excess of what's currently allowed by right in that zone, which is 14. So again, you would be approving that they could go up as far as that limit. If they decided to bring in a concept that was less than that limit, that's again up to them. But you know, that's what you would be approving for them to go with. So at site plan control, you know, these things are not going to be the items that you're going to be able to negotiate down as such, unless the developer is willing to. These are going to be the new as of rights that you would have for them. So, and I'll, you know, Mr. Pence, I'll stand to be corrected on this, but if you wanted to make this approval conditional on a satisfactory site plan being brought forward to council, you can also do that. However, you know, what you're approving here is the principles that they would be able to go away and finish their design. But you could tie this approval to an approved or satisfactory site plan control. Mr. Pence or the planner, if you'd like to comment on that, I'd open it up, but hopefully that'll give you some guidance, Councillor.
Thank you.
Sir, do you want to respond to that?
I'm not entirely sure how I want to answer that question. Because there's a lot of work that would go into developing a site plan, and when I say a lot of work, it's both time and cost. It's detailed design that gets right down to the nuts and bolts of how things are going to start to be constructed. So there's a big commitment there, and so without having the assurance of an official plan and zoning in place, then I'm not sure how our client would respond to something like that. Certainly, I think the official plan amendment is important to us at this point because it does require an approval from the county. So I would like to see an approval for the official plan amendment. And I suppose I'd like to see the zoning and bylaw amendment to go at the same time to give us the certainty that we have clear direction that we can proceed to getting underway with the site plan work. And through that process, of course, we've heard the comments. We understand your concerns and what you've mentioned. We understand the comments that we received from the public. So we're well aware of what is of interest to the community. So I can commit to working with our client to develop a plan that I think will meet what you're interested in. I can't commit to the specifics, of course, but we want to make something that work for the community because it's important to us as it is for you. It's a small community. I live in Carleton Place. I know what it's like to live in a small town close by, and so I want to be something that I can be proud of as well. So I guess where I'm going with this is to say that I can't ask you to defer your decision until we bring a site plan forward. I don't think that's something that our client would be all that interested in, but we would like to see your approvals go forward and to give us that certainty.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. I just have one more question for you, Mr. Pence. The shadow study that's was done for 12 and 4 and 8 p.m. Was that done at 14 meters or 15 meters?
So I understand there's some confusion with that, because someone mentioned earlier about five stories and four stories. The way those things were meant to be prepared was they're showing the sun, the shadow effects on a four, both a four-story and a five-story building. And the reason for that is it wanted to show that we're proposing a four-story building, and that shadow effect is a lot less than what a five-story. But even in the case of a five-story building, the shadow impacts are negligible. So they weren't done for this anything. They were done for the four-story or the, and the five-story.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I see they are done for 12, noon, 4, and 8. And you say they're negligible. I am rather disappointed that there wasn't any for 8 a.m. and 10 a.m.
There was. We did, since the last committee meeting, we had prepared another set of figures, and they were submitted to staff, and they're in your agenda package, I believe. Yeah. And they include the 8 o'clock time period.
I probably just missed them then. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Apologies. I just wanted to add on further to what our CEO and Mr. Pence was speaking about earlier. So I also want to clarify the two applications that are at hand tonight. The first is the official plan amendment, which permits the policy of permitting residential uses of up to 50 units per hectare. That's a policy. That's not a regulation. In terms of the zoning bylaw amendment, that puts in place the specific regulations around setbacks and, again, the 50 units per hectare. What council could do, should they choose, is to approve the OPA to permit the policy of residential development in addition to the existing highway commercial uses, with residential uses of up to 50 units per hectare, and approve the zoning bylaw amendment with a holding provision subject to a satisfactory site plan control application. So that way the developer could continue on with the knowledge that the official plan policy is in place, but council would further have the knowledge that the application or the development couldn't go without a satisfactory site plan approval that would then allow the developer to lift the holding provision. So that is an option as well.
Ken, can you summarize that? Because I had hard time hearing part of what she was saying.
Could ask her to repeat it, but basically what they're saying, what she's saying is the first that council approved, the OPA amendment, that would allow the developer to continue on with the county process. And if I understood, and that council approved a zoning bylaw with essentially a holding provision that at the time that you're satisfied with the site plan control, then they actually have the zoning bylaw amendment as well. So you're basically saying there's another step here where you have the ability to have another decision point, we'll say. But I think just in full on that, what Mr. Pence was saying is that doesn't necessarily give the developer the, I guess, the comfort level that they have the authority to proceed, because what you're basically doing is you're inserting another decision point, so that they have to work with.
Okay.
Mr. Pence, did you want to, you good on that? That's clarified.
I think that suggestion is reasonable. Personally, I think holding is often overused and not maybe used properly sometimes, but it certainly is an option here. It would give us at least the knowledge that the zoning is in place subject to the holding being lifted, and that's a fairly standard process that we could live with. And I I think that the trigger for lifting the holding would be that the site plan is to your satisfaction, I think, because that's what the staff is saying. And so I'd be prepared to live with something like that.
Okay. So the clerk's going to draft the friendly amendment. Is this okay with the mover and the seconder, Deputy Mayor Minnelli and Councillor Ferguson? When she puts it up there, you can read it.
Just give us 2 seconds.
Yep, take your time.
Seeing as the door was open, I'm wondering if council would want an amendment for a portion of this to be affordable housing.
Let's get this on the table first, and then...
No. That's not the proper procedure for that.
Right now, we're doing this friendly amendment, and we're just waiting for the clerk. And after, we'll see where we go with this one, and then we'll move forward. Go ahead.
Okay. No.
The amended motion is up on the screen, what it reads is, and that council approve the zoning bylaw amendment subject to a holding provision to be lifted with site plan approval to change the zone, and it's the same. Okay, so okay. I've inserted to a holding provision, subject to a holding provision to be lifted with site plan approval.
You're okay with that, Maggie? Okay, Councillor Ferguson and Deputy Mayor Minnelli, you're okay with the changes?
Yes. I don't like friendly amendments, but I'm okay with it.
So.
And that council approve the zoning bylaw amendment subject to a holding provision to be lifted with site plan approval to change the zoning on the lands known as. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
I guess so. Reluctantly, I will.
Okay.
I don't like forcing people's hand. I don't think it's a way to carry on business. It's showed up a couple of times in this meeting, and I'm not a real fan of it.
And Councillor Ferguson, you said yes as well. Okay, so discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Sorry? The whole motion, sorry. So discussion on the whole motion with the amendment is what I should say. Mayor Lowry.
I'm reluctant as well. If it's what will help move this forward, then I will support it, but I'm reluctant to add the holding provision.
Any more comments or questions on this? Okay, we'll call the vote. All in favor? That's carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to F2. Zoning Bylaw Amendment Application Z1720, Plan 6262 MSPT Lot 7 and 8, RP 27R569 Part 2, Carr Street in Elmont. Mover and seconder for this recommended motion. Councillor Holmes, we have a seconder. Councillor Ferguson. Maggie, do you wish to speak to this? Can I get you to put your microphone up close? I'm sorry, I just having a hard time hearing your voice.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Yes, so this application is for a vacant lot on Carr Street, at the intersection of Carr Street and Martin Street North. There we go. The owners are Rachel and David Ort, and they have applied to rezone the subject property to permit the construction of a semi-detached bungalow fronting onto Carr Street. The proposed zoning would be a specific subzone category, and the zoning would be specifically the R2D zone. Again, it's a vacant lot of about 0.27 acres with frontage along Carr Street of 27.43 meters and frontage along Martin Street of 38.71 meters.
Thank you. Questions and comments? Councillor Girard?
I'd like to bring up a couple of things that I noticed. For example, on page 61, it's showing that the backyard is going to be 80 feet deep, and yet on page 59, under the provisions and the sizes, it's I highlighted the minimum required parking, which is one space per unit, will be provided with inside the attached garage. There's going to be less than 10 feet based on the picture on page 61, less than 10 feet from the front of this building to the street or the road or the municipal property. Based on the concerns of the residents in the area, I'm wondering if this is actually going to create more of a problem than it's going to, similar to what the residents were concerned with regards to parking. We were told that this couple they're planning on living in there, which is wonderful. This is going to be a rental location for them. I have rentals, and I'm telling you right now that a couple with two kids are probably not going to drive one car, and they're going to have to park somewhere, and right now there is no parking on this street.
What was the question?
So my question is this the best situation to be putting an R2 into an R1 area? All the other properties have adequate parking, and this is, it looks to me like it's a setup so that they can actually create another building on the back of it. So it just seems to be too dense to the front. I think it's going to be creating issues similar to what some of the next things that are coming up with regards to having to make easements for...
I'm getting confused, Councillor Girard.
Pardon me?
I'm getting confused what your question is.
My concern is that this location of this house and the thought of putting an R2 in this area is going to be... possibly be a problem for the R1. So I'm against having this layout in this neighborhood.
Okay. Go ahead, Maggie.
Thank you, Councillor Girard, for your comments. I will note that the requirement for parking for each dwelling unit is one space per dwelling unit, and that is a provision within the zoning bylaw. So unfortunately, staff can't request additional parking to be provided as they have met the parking minimums. In terms of your other concern of potentially creating another lot, I did speak with Tyler Duval, our planning consultant, who authored the report. And in this report, he does note that further development other than two units as presently proposed would be considered overdevelopment. And I did have him walk me through the density calculations that he performed. On page 58, He has noted that there is a general target of 15 units per hectare for density, which is slightly missed by this application's proposed, which would result in 18.2 units per hectare. However, this is fairly minor and wouldn't require an official plan development. Tyler further did the calculation for 3 units on the site, which would have resulted in 27.4 units per hectare. And at that density, any proposed severance for additional semi-detached or single detached, based on this, would require an official plan amendment to our density policies, as it would be much denser than what we would like to see, and it then would be consistent with our policies. So if there were to be a severance on this property, it would require an official plan amendment, and without it, staff would not support it.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on this recommended motion? All in favor of this recommended motion? That's carried. F3, encroachment agreement, 136 Browham Street, Sweetman and Schmidt. Recommend a motion that council approve the encroachment request for the lands legally described as part lot 97, plan 6262 Elmont Ward, municipality Mississippi Mills, municipality known as 136 Browham Street, and direct staff to prepare the encroachment agreement. Mover and seconder, please. Councillor Maiden, Mayor Lowry, questions or comments? All in favor? It's carried. F4, proposed uses for Mississippi Mills Business Park in Elmont. The recommended motion that council receive the report titled Proposed Uses for Mississippi Mills Business Park, Elmont, as information. Mover and seconder, please. Councillor Maiden, Councillor Holmes, comments or questions? Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
When I was, I just seen on the agenda when I was reading it before that it has printing on there, a printing, right, for uses for the business park. I hope it's not a printing. I don't even know if they use ink anymore. Like, I could be way out there, but that's what caused the plumes in Carlton Place was, suspectedly a printing shop or dry cleaning. So I'm wondering, should that use be red circled for, so it's not a commercial printing shop that uses ink and the chemical they use to, because it's so close to the wellhead?
Yeah, I think if that's the desire of council, we could remove that. I mean, a lot of what's in here is suggested. And by the way, this is this report is basically outlining a process. It's giving you some information in terms of proceeding, but this is in direct response. This is a staff action to come back to council with a report to outline example uses and a process for us to update the uses in the business park. So this was brought forward by Councillor Dougherty, looking to, because right now, I believe the gist of the action that Councillor Dougherty put forward was that individual property owners wanting to sell land are sometimes hampered by the ability to sell to some prospective buyers because they would then have to go through a zoning amendment in order to purchase the land and use it for the purposes that they intend to. So what we're doing is broadening the number of uses. If council, this would go to public meeting, there would be consultation on this. So this would not be the first time that council will get this. This is mainly an information report. I believe the recommendation is to receive the process. And what this would do is start the process. But like I said, we would have a public meeting based on this. So there would be feedback solicited from the public property owners, and then it would be brought back to council to make a decision on. So if it turns out that printing establishments is not favored, well, I'm sure we could work on it then.
It's not virtual printing spot.
Virtual printing, there we go.
I could be wrong, but I believe there is a printing establishment there, printing and photocopying. That, I think that's what they're referring to.
I'm not concerned about photocopies. It's about a full printing shop where they use the ink and they have to clean the machines every day and use the sewer system to get rid of it.
Right. Councillor Holmes.
So in case it's not a virtual printing shop, I think Deputy Mayor Minnelli can be assured that one of the, as part of the policy, the Mississippi Valley Conservation Authority has to be a consultant for risk management of anything that might be going in there. So it should help you out there, Rick.
Any more comments, questions? Councillor Dredd?
If we're going to be talking about printing, we should possibly also be talking about the dry cleaning, because that was actually one of the components that was also discussed with the plume in Beckwith.
Anything else? All in favor to receive his information? Carried. So we'll skip down to F6. Addition to the municipality's names reserved list, Blakely. The recommended motion that the committee of the whole recommend that council approve the addition of Blakely to the municipality's name reserve list for consideration for future naming of a street within the municipality. Get a mover and seconder, please. Councillor Jarrett, Councillor Ferguson, comments or questions? Did the deputy clerk want to speak to this or? Okay, all in favor of this recommended motion? That's carried. No notice of motions. Information items with no mayor's report this evening. County councillor's report. Deputy mayor.
Okay. I'm sure the Mayor Lowry will have something to add to this, but so we'll start at the top. We purchased a Trishaw for Lanark County Lodge, which is a motorized bike to taking, it's called Cycling Without Borders, and it was all done through donations, so it's not coming out of the county buck. We discussed amended procedures for the Warden Committee's chair elections and the chair elections, and we came up with a way to do it. So we're going to do the nominations electronically, and then the vote, the nominations opened yesterday, and they closed November 17th. We also adopted and renewed a cost-sharing agreement with Smith Falls, which is when it comes to, they do some of our fire contact with the radios, and there's a whole bunch of things they do with the town. And the problem was they're not part of the county, and they had a decision that they have to pay HST, so the county's auditor did not agree with the CRA's position and filed a notice, so we'll see where that goes. They also updated priorities. They have about 10 priorities: long-term care home, social housing, cell and internet expansion, climate and the environment, trail promotion. They mentioned the Alameda and Almont was such a good job. A climate action plan, social housing and energy efficient upgrades for our social housing thing is they've took on, which I wasn't a big fan of. And they're also trying to recruit staff. There's a real staff shortage at Lanark Lodge, and they're trying to recruit a bunch of staff for there, and they're going to mitigate borrowing and try to keep all our everything at 3% for increases. And that's about it. Mayor Lowry? I'm sure you have something to add.
I just have one thing I wanted to add, and it's just following up on an email I had sent out to council. On the ECDEV committee, the whole agenda, there was that report on the last mile, the broadband last mile piece.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, council hasn't made a decision on. But if we were to make a decision at county on that, it would impact the 2021 budget. So it's certainly coming up. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was going to be circulated to the CEOs and treasurers. I'm not sure if that report has made it to the CEOs. It has made it to the CEOs and treasurers. Okay. It may be something we would want to include in our November 24th budget meeting, because for us to participate, there'll be a cost in that potential project. And it is still, I think we could say, getting thought out. Like, it's still kind of grassroots right now. But just to follow up on the email I had sent out about that item.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. Under the updates and priorities, is there any update on the lobbying for access to utility poles for eYarn? Which has been an ongoing issue, and I just wonder if there's any updates.
Well, it is ongoing. And,
microphone.
That is ongoing, and I think they're making a little bit of progress. There's been discussion, but that's about it. Very slow.
Go ahead.
I can sympathize with them as well, trying to be consistent and levy increase of about 3%, knowing that we're going to have difficulty meeting that. I wonder if there's any consideration for them accepting some uploading.
No.
I think that might go over like a lead balloon.
Mayor Lowry.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment on the utility pole piece. Following the delegation that myself and the warden and CEO Graves had with Minister, which minister? It's too late. My brain's not working anymore. The Minister of Infrastructure, the Provincial Minister of Infrastructure. Following that, the county had put out a press release just following up on what had occurred in that meeting. And both myself and the warden, and actually the CAO as well, had been contacted by Hydro One in response to the comments in our press release about the challenges with accessing utility poles and the additional costs. I can't say that there was a lot came from, I think, any of the three conversations that were had on our parts, but it was somewhat encouraging to know that there's somebody at Hydro that's at least paying attention to some of these issues that are coming forward. The person I spoke to at Hydro One had indicated that she'd also spoken to Alan Thompson, who's the chair of ROMA, and he's the chair of our rural caucus as well for AMO. And I know there had been an invitation to perhaps be a speaker at ROMA in January to try to push that forward. Now, whether this individual at Hydro One would take that opportunity or not, I don't know. I guess it depends on how serious they are about being a partner in this kind of work. But we did have that contact anyway, and I can share this individual's name with you if you might wish to follow up yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Welcome.
Any more questions about the county councillor's report? We don't have any MVCA report this evening. Mover and seconder for the information list, please. Councillor Maiden, Councillor Holmes, anything to be polled? I'll give you a minute to get to page 107. Nothing there. Okay. All in favor to receive the information list? Carried. Meeting calendar on page 126. Councillor Maiden.
Just to add, the library board next meeting is November 19th at 3 p.m. And I Heritage Committee is meeting, I think, November 26th at same time, 3 p.m.
Okay. Moving on, other new business, anything? On the pending list, page 127 to 129, questions or comments on the pending list? Nothing? Quiet bunch.
November 17th is a big red letter day.
Mover and seconder for adjournment. Mayor Lowry, Deputy Mayor Minnelli, all in favor? We are adjourned.